Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, Huey.
Riley.
I couldn't help but notice your sign, and I hope you boys aren't too upset about me having to prosecute Mr. Kelly.
Hey, man, you do what you gotta do.
Why R. Kelly, huh? What did R. Kelly do to you?
He's accused of relieving himself on an underage girl on tape, which is against the law.
Okay. But let's examine this whole peeing thing. So I can pee in the toilet, and it's okay. But if I pee on a person, it's like, not okay.
Well, yeah.
Well, what if I'm peeing and Huey's in the bathroom and I accidentally pee on Huey? Should I go to jail?
What the hell would I be doing in the bathroom while you're in the bathroom?
Hold up. Remember when we used to sleep in the same bed when we was littler? From time to time, I'd have a little accident.
You still do?
Shut up! So, Mr. Dubois, Mr. I wanna lock niggas up for peeing. What's the statute of limitations on bedwetting? Why not prosecute me and R. Kelly at the same time, huh?
Now, Riley, no one's going to prosecute you for bedwetting.
And you shouldn't. It's a natural bodily function. And now every nigga in the world gonna be scared to pee. I may never pee again.
Riley, it was a little girl.
Oh, I seen that girl. She ain't little. I'm little.
Yes.
Gary Coleman's little.
Yes.
Mini-Me is little.
Very.
And to the best of my knowledge, we all managed to avoid getting peed on so far.
But what about the victim?
Oh, yes, the victim. At what point does personal responsibility become a factor in this equation?
I don't think that...
I see piss coming, I move.
Mm.
She saw piss coming, she stayed.
Yes, she did,
and why should I have to miss out on the next R. Kelly album just for that?
Man, you just got beat by an 8-year-old.
Dearly beloved, we have gathered here today to issue this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deepers, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Konnichiwa to our friends in Japan, shouting out Tokyo Mike. This is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we have about 90 minutes, so we're going to disseminate as much information, fun, facts, and fire, as much information as we can. That's what we do. That's our shtick. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. The water is always warm. We do not bite much. Feel free to buzz in with your questions, protestations, comments, what have you. We will address it. Alternative groove, black rock, psychedelic soul, you know what we do. We give you the real. So after the musical break, we'll come back. The captain up front has his diatribe. I suspect he's going to talk about ISIS or ISIL. Pretty rough stuff. Beheadings of American journalists. We got to talk about it. And then I'm also going to talk about a Facebook connection, a Facebook gentleman who thought that I was a frustrated liberal. Now, you know that I'm a conservative or I have a conservative bent. Maybe I'm in the Cosby-esque conservative, even though he doesn't consider himself a conservative. But if you leave the liberal plantation in any way, ask Don Lemon, in any way, you will be ostracized. But I am not a frustrated liberal. We'll make it clear. We'll address it. So, up with the groove. This is Vintage Trouble, Total Strangers. We'll be right back. And again, let's groove. Ride a little bit, folks. Afropunk attendees from 2013. That was Vintage Trouble, Total Strangers. Without further ado, he is the captain. Captain, you need it on the bridge and in the ready room. Let's get to it. Captain Kirk.
I'm going to get right into it due to time constraints. I'm going to get right into it. I'm going to talk about the Muslims beheading people who are non-Muslim, the jihadist Muslims. But before I speak about it, I have to give you the prerequisites so you can understand the diatribe. All of these things I'm going to mention are all intertwined in some way, and it allows you to be able to understand what I'm saying to you in a much better way. I could just come here and drop it real quick in 4 minutes, and then you'd be like, huh, what? No, you don't do that. have to give you the prerequisites. It's like you taking English 102 before you did 101. That doesn't make any sense. You're going to fail. So let's get it started. Now, according to the Kabbalah, Zohar, and Talmud, these are religious books that people here, unless you're Jewish, do not read. But according to these books, all Edomic worlds fail. Now, that doesn't mean anything to the Westerner. What is an Edomic world? Edomic world is code name for banker world. Now, you just learned something. According to these books, the Kabbalah, Zohar, and Talmud, those are not my books. I didn't write those books. That's according to them, not according to the captain. And ironically enough, China is not an Edomic world. Neither is North Korea. And China, a generation ago, were a bunch of buffoons. Now look at them. Something seems to happen when you don't have the bankers around. But anyway, back to the next part. Just follow along with this. According to Steve Hawking, that's the guy in the wheelchair. You know him, the scientist in the wheelchair. He says scientists that talk about their IQs and how many degrees that they have are losers. I found that hilarious that he would say something like that, because what he was doing was busting shots at another scientist. And I just found it hilarious that these super-duper-duper-duper-duper educated, highly learned people actually do this. This is something that you see other people doing who are not so educated. So it was just amazing to me. But in essence, what he was saying was you have to shrink your self-importance and make everything about your work. Because when you don't do that, you open yourself up to attack. Now, what do I mean by self-importance? Self-importance with males, that is their ego. If you look at lions, the male lion, huge self-importance. Look at the male. Look at their mane. The female has to do the hunting. Though the male is more powerful, you would see the male coming, even if it's crouched down because of its mane. So the female goes out and does the hunting. And even the female, and we know lions are very powerful, they crouch down and then they grab whatever animal that they're going to grab. They pounce on them. Timing is everything, even though the lion is very powerful. Now follow me with this. Now, according to Bruce Lee, the way the intercepting fist, every attack opens you up to attack. So if you go on the attack, you want to do something. What do you want to do? You want to scapegoat yourself. What is the scapegoat? Obama is the scapegoat for the bankers. How so? What do you mean Obama is the scapegoat for the bankers? Obama, the president of the United States, in case if you're under a rock, he catches all the filth, the disease, the frost, the feces, whatever you want to call it, from the American people for the bankers. It works so well that the American people never attack the bankers. They only attack Obama. That's scapegoats. That's the power of scapegoats. Beautiful system. Now, that being said, according to Penrose, The Road to Reality, not the captain's work, reality goes along an exponential curve. What does that mean in layman's terms? What does that mean? Let's explain. You go to school, grade 1 through 6. There isn't anything happening there. Continue going to grade school. Finish off high school. High school diploma. High school diploma is really nothing. You get a small spike on the reality curve. People go to your graduation, yada, yada, yada. No big deal. You go on, you enter into college. You go to college 4 years, you get your bachelor's. You get a slightly bigger spike. Nothing too much happening there. You continue. You say to yourself, I'm going to get a master's in whatever your chosen field is. You go get your master's degree. You get a bigger spike along the exponential curve. You're working for, let's say, 8 years. And you say, well, you know, this school thing was cool, but it's not really doing it enough for me. So you decide to go back and get your doctorate. So at night you're doing your doctorate work and everything else. And then finally you get your doctorate, and then boom, yada, yada, yada. What happens? Now people are calling you in here, they're calling you in there, they're calling you doctor, you're making more money, you get a book deal. If you get lucky enough, CNN calls you in. That's going along the exponential curve. This is something that young people do not know. This is something that even older people do not know. This is why wage slaves start and stop everything. That's how reality works. It has to go along the exponential curve, and then you finally get a huge spike, and then everything starts going crazy. Now, what does this have to do with the beheadings? Now, remember, a couple of weeks ago, when Stephen A. Smith was yanked off of TV for his statements pertaining to women, which we believe were valid, I said that the Muslim world is mutually compatible, but also mutually exclusive. It is a soliton. Now, the soliton was first described by John Scott Russell. That's who did it. And then mathematicians, you know, have expounded upon it year after year and year after year. Soliton, look at a rubber sheet, and then you have a wave on one side, and then you have another wave on the other side. That's the simplest way to explain it. On one side of soliton, you have the Muslim world. This is what I said to you, where the male is the dominant figure and the female is the dog. On the opposite side of the soliton, all right, I said here, really the woman has the power. And you don't think so because your self-importance with the males is very high, so you can't really see it. You see it when it's time for you to get divorced. You go out and work and make all of this money, and then the woman, when she's ready, she takes the money away from him. How many men out there right now have lived in a house, and you got into a domestic dispute with your wife, she kicks you out of the house, and you're still paying the mortgage, she gets an order of protection. So who really has the power here? Now, the problem with the soliton is that it's out of order, because it has to mirror the Muslim world. That means the women here will get stronger, and the men will get weaker. It's all in the mathematics. It's not my mathematics. I didn't make up the soliton. This is how it's going to work, whether you like it or not. So, and you see it happening in real time. That's what's scary. Look at all the women on the sidelines of NFL games. What do they really know about football? Maybe one or two of them have talent, but come on, guys. See this now. Women driving the bus. They driving the tractor trailers. You didn't see all of this in the 80s and 70s. What's happening? Something is going on. Now, going along the exponential curve, now that you understand, all right? And I mentioned that this is banker world. The bankers bring in multiculturalism. They bring it in. That's where it happens. Everybody comes from somewhere else. All over Europe, you have many Muslims. They suck the energy out of the country from where the immigrants come from, so the immigrant is left with no choice but to go abroad. And they let them in, one, two, three. They relax immigration. So now you have all of these people in these countries all over Europe. I'll get to the United States later. All over Europe that should be left in their country. Then you have transgenic chimp Netanyahu, all right? Transgenic chimp Obama, all right? From their leadership standpoint, even though they're taking orders from the transgenic chimps, the bankers, you're bombing the mess out of these Muslim regimes. The Muslim is already here. So sooner or later, the Muslim is going to react. All right? A Muslim, devout Muslim jihadist, he will attack anything that's not self. He does not fear death. I'm not talking about Zionist Muslims. He does not fear death. So the transgenic chimp, Netanyahu, when he's bombing these Muslims into submission, all you start to do is galvanize the Muslim community that's already living with you, you transgenic chimp idiot. So as it goes along the reality curve, the exponential reality curve, it starts out slow. Remember, there was a beheading in London, big thing. Remember the black Muslim that beheaded the, you know, the soldier and everything else? He didn't have any business living there anyway. Give him his country. Let them do what they want. Remember, it's the mathematics. It's the soliton. The problem with bankers always try to go against the mathematics. That's why all Edomic kingdoms always fail. They're a bunch of transgenic chimps. You can't go against the Math Max. It's not my Math Max. The Math Max is right there. Penrose did the Math Max. That's why it's called Penrose Road to Reality. The Math Max that's needed for reality. There you go. It's right there, done already. Not the captain's work. So, as they begin to bomb these Muslims, the Muslims abroad are looking at this and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm right here. You understand? So, it starts going from one Muslim beheading somebody for the year. Then it goes one every 6 months. Then it goes one a month. Then it goes one a week. Then it goes one a day. Then it goes one an hour, et cetera, et cetera. Then you have nothing but Muslims all there in France. They could wipe out France in a night. You understand? This is the stupidity of the bankers. And this is the stupidity of your leaders. This is what it's meant when reality goes along the exponential curve. How do you stop this, you transgenic leaders? You stop this by stop bombing them. Leave them alone. That's what you do. But the problem is the threat is already here. The one good thing in the United States, you could round these individuals up over a couple of days here in the United States. In Europe, you can't do it. There's just too many of them. They messed up. So that's the one good thing. That's just essentially how the reality works in respect to this. Now, I'm not saying they're right or they're wrong. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying according to the reality, according to the mathematics that's been laid down by these great people that I mentioned, this is the way it's flowing. And that's why I was able to tell you what happened with Stephen A. Smith. That's why I'm able to tell you that the woman is going to get stronger here whether you like it or not, because it has to mirror the soliton that's happening there in the Muslim world. That's the reality. That's what's going to happen. So let's say if you could freeze yourself and wake up 200 years later, you would not, as a male, probably want to wake up in this reality, because these women would be, whoo! It's a good thing that men at this given time are still stronger than females. This is not to say that all women are bad. I'm not saying anything like that. But a lot of times men say, this is what men say a lot of times, if females had the same strength as men, they would just kick the mess out of you because they can. So, back directly to ISIS. Your transgenic chimp leaders need to back off, because if they keep going down this curve, the exponential curve, it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse, because that's what the mathematics says. It's not my work. I could just apply it. Now, I could tell you more, but I'm going to just leave it at that due to time constraints. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd. Afro Nerd. Afro Nerd. Check your mic, Afro Nerd.
Yes.
All right, there you go.
Yes. Sorry about that.
All right.
You know what? We have a caller. So you laid down quite a few facts and notations. So I want the caller to weigh in, and I'll give you my bit. This is an ongoing struggle, Captain. It's been ongoing since the 20s, believe it or not. But really, you go beyond that. But let's say as far as Western involvement, this goes back to the 20s. So you're talking about a set of folks, whether it's Al-Qaeda yesterday and now it's ISIS or ISIL, whichever acronym you want to choose today. They're committed. They're here for the long haul. So I want to open up the lines. 703, welcome to Africa Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. What's up?
Hey, good evening. This is Bison for Life. I'm calling from outside D.C.
Hey, Bison.
What's up?
Hey, Captain.
You were over there, sir. You were over there. You could tell us something.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you a little bit, but I know time is limited, so I took a couple of notes from the captain's rant, so I'm going to kind of break it down a little bit. I think if I was a woman and I turned on this podcast in the future, I would be very concerned. I mean, I heard some sexism going through there, and just let me finish before I kind of piece it together here. I just think we got to be careful. And there's nothing wrong with women of any stripe advancing. I've been too many places on this planet where women weren't even third-class citizens. So, and in a lot of parts of the world, you can still burn a woman alive, or you can just say, I want a divorce and kill her, and, you know, you can eat Fruit Loops later in the afternoon because the law won't touch you. So we got to be careful with using sexist language. Second, let's not label all Muslims in a certain stripe. That's like me looking at, let's say, evangelicals who follow, like, David Koresh or Jim Jones or whoever, and we label all that, you know, we label Christians the same way.
But I
have you have different sects of Muslims, Sunnis, Shia, and the problem was what happened in Iraq, who claimed kept a foot on each other's, all of the tribes and their sects neck. So they kept Iraq together. When you take him, when you took him out, the boot was removed from the neck. So that's what you have over there.
And Bison, one thing. I made the distinction. I said Zionist Muslims, and I said the bombing galvanizes. That brings together Muslims. You see, that's what I said.
I think that's too broad because, I mean, if you really look at it, we armed them. If you want to just look with McCain and, you know, just a simple Google will do.
Of course.
You know, and, you know, we, this is nothing new, what we've done overseas. This is nothing new. And trust me, I've seen people blown to bits from drone strikes and what have you. A beheading is a horrific thing, but what it is, it's used to galvanize and create a reaction. We want a reaction. They want us to. They want us to react in force, and then what that will do is create that they can use that to create a jihad worldwide, so Muslims from all over the world can go there. I'm not worried about
exactly
what's over there. I'm worried because it's so easy for them to get a visa and come here.
Exactly.
So, like, I mean, next Afropunk, somebody can just go strap and blow up in front of a stage and whatnot, and it's
exactly
crazy to see, you know, that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
We have an ocean separating that, and I'm not even worried about those born over there. I'm worried about those who've been radicalized here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll stop and just listen, and I know AfroNerd has, you know, something to say, and I'll just, if I may, chime in after that.
No, that was good. That was excellent. Hello? Afro Nerd.
Oh, I'm sorry, my mic.
Yeah, mic.
Yeah. Where was your sexism there? Weren't you talking about it from the Islamic perspective?
Yes. Yes, there was an Islam.
So maybe,
that's what
maybe
I'm talking about.
Maybe you were, maybe you missed that part. I thought,
and
I didn't think it was one of your personal views.
And I made a distinction. It wasn't, I didn't say whether it was right or wrong. I didn't say anything. That's all right. Go ahead.
All right. To keep it brief, we're talking about jihad from a modern Islamic perspective or a faction of modern Islam. And Bison is correct. And I had a conversation about this actually maybe an hour before we went on air. I was actually, you know, it's Wednesday. And as a true Afro nerd, I went to the comic shop, and because of the success of ISIS, and I'm saying success in quotes because they are a terrorist group, and their intent is to elicit terror, and I've seen that shook look during the Bush administration, and lo and behold, I'm seeing that shook look from Americans based on these recent beheadings. So they're successful in the sense that you have two young male American journalists that were beheaded openly. I mean, you have a set of folks that are beheading people with aplomb. They're raising heads and tweeting photographs of these decapitated heads. So it's a frightening thing. And you're talking about a sect of Islam, and it is, to be fair, it's a sect. that they cannot be reasoned with. When this young mother, the mother of this last gentleman who was killed, this journalist, she was pleading, and I knew full and well, that's not going to work. That might even embolden them. They do not have any kind of affinity or affection or mercy for Westerners and Western culture. And, you know, my belief is this. I think that Americans, and it will never happen, but if Americans went back to, let's say, 1920s isolationism, there was a long time political ideology that the American government and American culture propagated from its inception to about really around World War I, where it was isolationism. We're on our own. It's all about, you do hear words like American exceptionalism, that kind of thing. But that had to do with America is for Americans, American-made products. It really wasn't this sense of international cohesion.
Nationalistic America.
The captain talked about, yes, and you've spoken about this quite a bit, where there was always, especially because of Obama, the ascendancy of President Obama, and we could be tribal as African-Americans to see him there. But he is there for a reason. And as much as I dislike Cornball West, Dr. Corny West, when he goes into oligarchs and when he goes into a corporatized government and he talks about how President Obama, we can look at the success of Wall Street, the success of Wall Street and business and how it takes $1 billion to run a campaign in the modern era. He represents business. He represents this notion of preparing you for a world government. So if that's the deal, corporatist, I'm going into a little bit of what's the gentleman's name? Alex.
Jones?
Repeat that.
Alex Jones, you're talking?
Yeah, Alex Jones. I'm going into a little bit of Alex Jonesism, although he's off the rail. Some of what he says, listen, the Rothschilds, and I don't really believe in an Illuminati. Illuminatis are hidden. These people aren't hiding. They're too wealthy to hide. They're too wealthy to care. So the reality is there's a component that is pushing for a world agenda. If that was not the case, we should be going back to an isolationist viewpoint and leave these people alone, because we're talking about Western versus the Middle East, this faction of the Middle East that sincerely wants to go to a fundamentalist viewpoint of Islam, which is essentially the 8th century. They're conducting themselves like this is Game of Thrones, putting heads on pikes. I mean, it is what it is. We do not have a sensibility for this kind of stuff. And the success of ISIS or ISIL, formerly Al-Qaeda, they're rougher than Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is frightened of ISIS, which is kind of ironic. I think they actually dismantled or separated themselves, separated themselves a few months ago. Like in February, March of this year, they officially disbanded or broke off from ISIS / ISIL, ISIS, ISIL, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Not to go into so much detail, because I'm learning this stuff as well. I'm still learning. The Middle Eastern history, very complex, very rich, but when you start getting into this world, you're talking about a folks that do not believe in Westernization. by any stretch of the imagination. And they are hell-bent to spread Islam. Either this is you know, hey, the Crusades was about this too, from a Christian perspective.
Yep.
Okay. This is what religion is, the opiate of the masses. That's why I'm an agnostic.
That's hot.
I'm all about pure logic. My religion is, I say it jokingly, Jor-El sent his son Kal-El to save us from our sin. It's equally as goofy. Equally as goofy. Me reading Superman, it does not equate to me wanting to lop off somebody's head. But can't say the same for these cats. So the issue is, what will the United States or the Western powers really do about this? And this is a quagmire, because you're not talking about Syria as a nation state. You're talking about a fundamentalist religious sect within that country that wants to be starting something. And I hear a lot of big talk. People and it sounds cool. A lot of cowboyisms where they're very, you know, you hear folks that say, "Hey, if we had it up, this is not the Manhattan Project in Japan." Where people wear uniforms, and you're on your team, we have our team. It's not like that. This is a different type of warfare. This is modern warfare. So, turning in a statement that we hear quite a bit is, we need to turn that section of the country of that country or countries into glass. And we could do it, and we could do that, but ethically. You can't hold Syria accountable for the actions of a segment or a organization. That's like the Westboro Baptist Church in America, and they are deranged. You know, for those who may be unfamiliar with Westboro Baptist Church, they're in the news every couple of months because they seek to boycott and confront folks that are attending funerals of notables. Of people that are perceived to be, of good faith and honor, someone who dies. That, for instance, I wouldn't be surprised that they. Matter of fact, I'm surprised I haven't heard that they were going to show up at Robin Williams' funeral. Those are those kind of people. But you could see that on the flip side of insanity, from a Christian perspective, you have the Westboro Baptist Church. But you wouldn't want America to be attacked because of the actions of Westboro Baptist Church. And it is what it is. We're going to have to deal with this. We will talk about this because of time constraints. I can really go really deeper into this, going back into the conflicts from the 1920s to the creation of Israel. I mean, we can go into a lot of the Islamic world to really get into this thing. You know, all these different factions. I mean, hell, Muslims are fighting each other. And Western culture. I mean, this is a mess. But are you going to attack a nation state to deal with a terrorist group? But they're successful in the sense that they show a couple of highly publicized, grotesque horror shows, and folks are ready to engage. And that may not be the wise thing to do. But dropping a bomb like it's 1945, that's not going to work. Not going to work. Anything else you'd like to add, Captain?
Yeah, that's it for now. That's it for now. We'll monitor it. We'll move ahead. Now we just move ahead. We'll monitor it.
Yeah, it's something that we will have to address and, as you said, monitor. It's frightening, you know, to see these young men killed in such a grotesque way. And listen, you know, we don't talk about it, but they're beheading folks south of the border too.
Oh, yeah.
Pick your poison, whether it's religion or avarice, greed. Heads are being locked off. This is, in some ways, Captain, we are witnessing the veneer of civility.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you think and this is being very metaphysical and philosophical, but sometimes you think that we talk about this being the 21st century, it might as well be the 11th. It might as well, you know, when you talk about, if you factor in what happened with the Nigerian schoolgirls.
Yes, sir.
Under the God's religion. Under the God's religion. That's a separate faction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have all these nuts. The way what's happening in North Korea. We can go on and on. Pick your poison. Go to what's happening at the Ukraine. Mixed nuts all over this world. It might as well be the 11th century. People are still conducting themselves pretty much the same way. Slavery is still in effect also. Slavery is still in effect, even in this country. Yeah, folks that come across upstanding folks, even locally, upstanding wealthy people that have their own folk, have bringing for those from India who have folks that look like they might just be the help and they're actually slaves. You know, might as well be the 11th century. All right, I'm gonna go into a quick musical groove, Taffin, and when we come back, I want to address a gentleman that respectfully approached me via Facebook, and he essentially saw this show, but me specifically, as a disgruntled liberal. And I'm going to have to disabuse him. I'm going to have to really give him some information and explain to him that is just not the case. There's a lot to unpack about this.
Should be good.
And it really goes to the premise of AfroNerd Radio, it going beyond just being a nerd-centric thing, that it is about alternative speak, alternative political discourse, and I'll get into it. I'm not saying that I took offense, but I'm a little sorrowful that, you know what, we'll talk about it after the break. This is rock and roll, Yasiin Bey, or Mos Def, more commonly known as Mos Def. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Alert the squad.
Rock, roll, huh.
Alert the squad.
Rock, roll, huh.
Alert the squad.
Rock, roll, huh.
Alert the squad.
Rock, huh.
My grandmama was raised on a reservation.
Huh.
My great-grandmama was from a plantation. They sang songs for inspiration. They sang songs for relaxation. They sang songs to take their minds up off that fucked-up situation. I am, yes, I am the descendant of those folks whose backs got broke, fell down inside the gun smoke.
Black people,
chains on their ankles and feet. I am descendants of the builders of your streets.
Black people,
descendants to your cotton money. I am hip-hop.
Heavy metal for the black people.
I am rock and roll.
Rock and roll. Rock and roll.
Been here forever. They just ain't let you know. I said Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Chuck Berry is rock and roll. You may dig on the Rolling Stones, but they ain't come up with that style on their own. Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Little Richard is rock and roll. You may dig on the Rolling Stones, but they ain't come up with that shit on their own. Guess that's just the way you go. Steal my clothes and try to say they yo.
Yes, they do.
Business is so filled with pimps and hoes, trying to take everything that you made to control.
There they go.
Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Bo Diddley is rock and roll.
Right.
You made it go on the Rolling Stones, but they ain't the first place the credit belongs to. Whoa, gon' take it. Ooh, we go back to
rock and roll.
Whoa, gon' take it. Ooh, we go back to rock and roll.
Whoa,
I was thinking, oh, we your plans on now. but I'll only be trying to fuck with Limp Bizkit. When I get down at my zone, I be rocking
bad brains and fishbone.
I ain't trying to slow your groove, but that ain't the way I'm trying to move. I don't turn on corn and get it on. I be playing Jimi Hendrix till the dawn. That's my world's born. Sitting up on my front lawn. Got the volume turned to 10. Play it, I became the rest of the day. When I'm on it in the cooker. Got to turn on some Jolly Hooker. When I want some rock and roll. Go to Otis Redding to give it some soul. Say, James Brown got plenty of soul. James Brown likes rock and roll. He can do all the shit to show. The Elvis Presley could never know. Like that. Energy ain't got no...
Excuse the expletives, folks. I couldn't get a chance to edit that out, but I think it's a pretty cool jam. It's a jam that's certainly an ode to black rock and roll musicianship. Again, Yasiin Bey, a.k.a. Mos Def Rock and Roll. This is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. And feel free to buzz in. Questions, protestations, comments, free-for-all. It's cool. 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have a lot. We only got about 40 minutes, so I'm going to try to get to at least two issues. One, this gentleman that sent a Facebook comment to my attention. I'm going to read it. Al, I just referred to him Al respectfully, his first name. I'll respond to him directly, and also I want to talk about respectability politics. I know we touched on respectability politics last show, but more things I thought about. How we should be pursuing respectability politics. I'll leave it at that. We should be, I'm saying collectively, tribally, or a number of black folk, we're being told or dissuaded, is a better word, dissuaded from respectability politics. The more I thought about it, we should be pursuing respectability politics, and I will unpack that after I unpack this. Anyway, reading Al's comment in my Facebook page, he says, a respectful, and in parentheses, although possibly backhanded, compliment. I think you're a frustrated liberal, masquerading as a conservative because you feel, ironically, marginalized by liberals. The first time I heard your show, I was expecting some simplified, judgmental drivel and sound bites. Yet I hear you attempting to break stereotypes, espousing self-affirming habits and expression, and being accepting of basically anyone who is not hurting themselves and by extension society. So why do you choose to lead with the oversimplified label of conservative, followed by independent? And given that you label yourself a conservative and you abhor crime, poverty, and ignorance, does this mean that you think liberals like wallowing in crime, poverty, and ignorance? Yes. I'm answering that for him. Yes, I think they do. It's, the short answer is because for many minority folk, black and brown folk specifically, who vote rabidly progressive in a progressive way, for the last 45 years, shouting out Detroit as an example, you have been under the purview of Democratic regime. Last time I checked, Detroit's bankrupt. You know, many of these places that have black, if you want to even go into colorizing things, you've had black leadership / progressive leadership, and the operative word in progressive is progress. And we're seeing these places are in horrible shape. So if you're saying that, I mean, obviously I'm being facetious about the crime, poverty, and ignorance, but they seem to be festering in places where black folks voted overwhelmingly Democratic. Going further into what he says, it seems that your views are exceedingly moderate and common sense. Yet from a marketing standpoint, you choose to separate yourself from a significant segment of people who share your goals, even if they differ on methods. I don't really get the impetus for such a separation. And then he says, in parentheses, I guess comically, the final chapter of my novel, Do you have any opinion on why conservatism has seemingly become so shrill, and yet your show is not? I fear that good sense is being marginalized by both conservatives and liberals. Okay, that I agree with. Much like the stereotypical child pressured into choosing either blood or crip. You should read Jesse Ventura's book. I think it's called Rebloodlicans and Democrits.
Mm-hmm.
I kid you not.
Rebloodlicans
and Democrits. I've yet to get that book, but in talking about it, I got to get that. And actually, I've gotten feelers from Mr. Ventura. I should have responded back to his people. That's another thing. By the way, although I tend to lead with the label liberal, I likewise have no tolerance for laziness, intellectual or physical, and I enjoy your show greatly. Excelsior. And then, you know, I answered him. I'm not going to go to my answer. But then he sends me a link, a wiki link to conservatism. And, you know, listen, conservatism, classical conservatism, to send a link on that, that might be a misnomer unto itself, Kasten, because, you know, you have in British Parliament, you have conservatives, but they wouldn't be likened to American conservatives, not really. And then this is the deal, and I'm going to try to be as succinct as I can. Any black person who was, I say any, but many black folks that were considered themselves Generation X, anyone born between 1965 and 1980, and then after that with the millennials, but let's say specifically Generation X, would minorities, specifically black or brown, but let's say black folks, you were probably raised to be democratic or to have progressive views or liberal views. Now, if you do the history and the due diligence, you go before that, black folks were politically conservative. You know, just Jackie Robinson was a noted conservative. Dr. King was a conservative, believe it or not, a registered Republican. It was not uncommon for black folks to be predominantly a part of the party of Lincoln. Lincoln was a Republican, and Lincoln freed the slaves to keep it simple, even though that was more complicated. So, logically, black folk from the first part of the 20th century, and when they were able to get the right to vote, voted the party of Lincoln. Black people had a lot and still do, but we were very much lockstep with self-determination. And this happened, unfortunately, under a segregated society or within a segregated society. So what does this all mean? When you go into the history, you can't discount history. Liberals use history oftentimes to their advantage. And I like what liberals say when they recount the historical record. When you recount facts, I'm not going to dispute 2 plus 2 equaling 4. I'm not going to dispute that. But if you're going to be honest, think about what Democrats stood for. Democrats, more specifically, Dixiecrats, shouting out Strom Thurmond and the crew, on a segregationist ticket. Democrats, you had Klansmen that were Democrats. So you just can't discount that history. Now, we know about Nixon and the Southern strategy. We know about that. Now, I'm not going to discount history. You have some Republicans that choose not to focus on the notion of a Southern strategy, but it was what it was. Willie Horton and that kind of thing under Ronald Reagan, using racial demagoguery to offset black folks to pursue white votes. But now we're more in a multiracial society. Republicans are going to have to figure out a new strategy. So why would I consider myself to be a conservative? Because when you look at what's going on with the liberals, I already just mentioned a quick thing about what has happened to black people in the inner city under Democratic regimes for decades, and that the lack of progress from progressives. That's just one thing. There's a notion of to the Democratic Party on a cultural sense, and I don't like that. I think the captain would agree with me on this. To be a quote unquote authentic black person, those who uphold, you know, those arbiters of blackness, being a Democrat or Republican should really be more about stratagem, being strategic, not about some kind of cultural connection or some kind of, as I always say jokingly, make me feel good, shouting out Halle Berry, make me feel good, make me feel good. Say a couple of platitudes, appeal to your culture, speak in a half ebonic way, and it makes you feel good, and yet your schools are crumbling, your infrastructure is crumbling, the black unemployment rate has remained essentially the same for the last 35 years. I mean, even as much as I was not a fan of the Bush administration, as neoconservatives, as emphasis on the term neoconservatives, as much as I was not a fan, he did promote the adage of the bigotry of low expectations. And that, to me, is a cornerstone of liberalism, that they appeal to you on a cultural sense, Al. They appeal to you culturally, but at the same time, they feel sorry for you. They feel sorry for you. They coddle you. And that is a type of bigotry. You're not asked to compete because they don't think you can. So I'm not a liberal, although I used to be one. Perhaps listening to this show, you may be finding yourself more attracted to some conservative notions. See, my issue, and the captain mentioned this, he encountered, and by the way, captain considers himself an independent. He is an independent. He encountered this when he spoke about his experiences at Afropunk a couple of weeks ago, where when folks were curious about the Inner Sanctum wearing Afropunk T-shirts, and when one of our Inner Sanctum, shouting out Mr. Moreno, when he went into the whole thing, and Captain went into the whole thing about what Afro-nerdism and Afro-nerd, what Afro-nerd radio was all about, and he just mentioned conservative, the liberal person who's supposed to be liberal-minded, conservative, you know, they're so stuck on that title of conservative that they think all conservatives are the same. I'm not a Tea Partier. I'm not a neocon. I'm not a religious conservative. I consider myself to be a moderate conservative. Matter of fact, I probably would be closer in line to a blue dog Democrat, which would be a conservative Democrat, someone who thinks maybe liberal socially but is more conservative fiscally. But what this shying away or this fear or reticence by many black folks, and actually not just black people, even white liberals, they're very antagonistic and fearsome of the concept of a black conservative because black people aren't supposed to think this way. They're going to pigeonhole you into a box. Heck, truth be told, even at Afropunk, which was a bastion of liberalism there, even at Afropunk, black folks listening to rock and roll and alternative music, that's a certain box that you're not supposed to be entering also. Everyone has these preconceived boxes that if you don't fit into that box, there's going to be a problem. So I lament that you feel that maybe I'm reaching, but because you think that because I'm an African American, you know you're really a liberal. You know you're really a liberal. No, that's not really the case. Not the case. And you know we have to be intelligent. You like this show because it's very difficult to deconstruct our arguments, and we give you facts. Even if it's an opinion, it's going to be reasoned. The beauty of the podcast format, as opposed to conventional radio, is that they work on sound bites. You only get a 2-minute, if you're lucky, a 30-second, 45-second rant. You're not able to extrapolate fully what somebody really means. And I would suggest to you, read a couple of books by black conservatism. Matter of fact, I would have appreciated if you sent me a wiki link to black conservatism. There are wiki links to everything. You know, but you sent me a link to conservatism. You didn't even send me a link to American conservatism. I mean, there's not many different types of conservatives there are. I mean, hell, even the gay folks are what, log cabin Republicans? And you know for sure that the cornerstone of especially religious conservatism, they're not feeling these log cabin dudes. But even for a log cabin, I think what's the guy that runs? He runs a I can't remember the name of the blog. So it's a very well known blog. He's a gay dude. I can't think of the gentleman, but he's a well-known blogger. He's conservative, believe it or not. But his blog is extremely popular. But he's a gay Republican. But when you speak, he's able to reason. So because you hear a black conservative who sounds reasonable, you know, I'm not down with Alan West. Alan West is a Tea Party conservative, and that's his right. You know, when you get into political discourse, I mean, I have degrees in political science, BA and MA in political science. So when I studied this, politics and political bents have ranges. One of the faults of the Tea Partiers, when you see these folks that are against Obama, is that they will have signs that are levied toward Obama as, one sign says he's a socialist, the other sign says he's a fascist. I mean, your argument is totally null and void. You can't be a fascist and a socialist at the same time. Just say Negro and make it simple and hold a sign.
That would
cut to the chase. And I'm saying that as a conservative. Because logically, no one brings this up. Fox has an agenda just like MSNBC has an agenda, just like CNN has an agenda. On the political scale, fascism and socialism are completely on opposite sides of it. It's north and south, just like Republican versus Democrat, liberal versus conservative. And there's a whole scale in between. So I ask you to be open-minded enough to understand that I'm not a liberal, although I used to be one. But I read a couple of books. Read Glenn Lowry, who ironically was a conservative in the 80s and early 90s. Now I think he's back to liberalism. But you still hear him. He still sounds a little rough. But he's back to being a liberal. John McWhorter, who we've had on the show, I'm going to get him back. Dr. John McWhorter from the Manhattan Institute is you don't know what he is because he sounds so conservative, but I think he considers himself to be a liberal. Walter Williams is another gentleman. There's quite a few. Shelby Steele, I always mention. I mean, Thomas Sowell. You know, just don't read. I mean, I'm going to close out on this, Captain. I could talk about this all day. But the bottom line is, open yourself up to at least hearing from some conservatives. Dare I say some black conservatives? I mean, Rand Paul, and Papa Paul, his cover. You know, they're conservatives, and yet they're not exactly, you know, they're not really engendered by the traditional religious conservatives. I mean, there is a range in all political bents, but because you hear the term conservative, you think I'm supposed to sound like Rush Limbaugh. I mean, it's pretty simple. But I think, you know, you might be listening to, because, you know, when I first started this, and on occasion I still get this, I was getting some pretty rough emails from people. Some folks swore I wasn't black. That was an issue. I mean, just kept them, just a barrage. They wanted to attack me personally for my views. And I'm giving a more of a G-rated PG version of some of the views I might feel on an After Dark show. Forget about Afro. You heard me on Afro Nerd Radio Dark. You wouldn't have doubts. But I'm giving you a softer, more palatable version. And still didn't like it, Captain. That's it. Any thoughts?
Well said. Well said. Let's move along.
But I had to address him. I had to address him because, you know, this is a common thing. You know, you're not really a conservative. Well, you know, if you think of conservatism in one way, maybe I'm not.
Hey, people also think you're 5'6".
That's true. I'm 6'2". So people have a whole kind of, you know, but these boxes. You know, this is your listen, being a person of color can be problematic. We see it. You should know how this works. Well, you're a black guy. How come you know, you play basketball? You see how one-dimensional this thing can be? Whether it's religion or politics or race and culture, ethnicity, if you are a simpleton, you will think one-dimensionally. And this show is very much into propagating the notion of thinking multidimensionally. Even from a conservative perspective, you can still think multidimensionally. That's it. It is what it is. All right. I want to go into another issue. I'm going to forego a musical break. Or do you think I should, Captain? You think we should go for another musical break and address it or what? I was going on for a while.
Well, let's take a musical break and come back with respectability politics.
Yeah, that's going to be a heavy one, too. Respectability politics, and I got a quick clip that I played last show, but I shortened it, so I'm getting really to the meat. It's about a minute and a half. And it's another reason why I'm not a liberal, because this view, when we get into what it is, Captain, is very much a cornerstone of liberalism that people don't pay attention to, and when you deconstruct it, you'll realize, oh, this guy's not a liberal. All right. You know what? Let's go to more classic groove. This is Maggot Brain, Funkadelic. Oh, about 2 minutes of it. That's like a 10-minute jam, folks. So about 2 minutes of Maggot Brain, Funkadelic, classic groove. We'll be right back. Folks, I hated to let that go, but that's about a 10-minute jam. That's the late Eddie Hazel on guitar, certainly an underrated guitarist. Black rock at its best. And I need to really shout out Jocelyn Cooper, that perhaps they might want to consider George Clinton to make an appearance at Afropunk. Who better? Who better to appear at Afropunk? I mean, that gentleman was Afropunk 50 years ago. So I don't. That's got to be a consideration. So I'm gonna just throw her a little blur. I mean, I don't have to speak for her. I'm pretty sure she might have been thinking about it, but I just can't think of anyone that that would be really apropos for Afropunk. I mean, talk about what Afropunk represents, letting your freak flag fly. He's the first person that put that flag on the moon. So again, George Clinton, Eddie Hazel, 1971's Maggot Brain, a classic. All right, getting back into the fold. This is the midweek in review edition, midweek in review edition of Afro Nerd Radio. Something's been festering from the last show, Captain, and it's this whole notion of respectability politics. And it, actually, it's a term that's bandied about ever so often. It dates back to really during the times of W.E.B. Du Bois. There's always been this notion of respectability politics. And I guess to get to the brunt of what it means, even Booker T. Washington, I mean, there have been leaders that have espoused this notion that this is how it is being interpreted, that respectability politics deals with disenfranchised groups, let's say black people in this instance. But it can apply to other protected groups. But in the case of black folks, that if you do your best, if you capitulate to the majority culture, if you comply to whiteness and white culture, if you comply, if you acquiesce to that, if you just act a little bit more like such and such, life will be better for you, doors will open, racism goes away. That's how it is often interpreted, not how I interpret respectability politics. And again, just as progressive politics has the operative word progress, the operative word for respectability politics is respectable or respect. So I got to play this clip. I played it before, but this is a bit more truncated so we can get to the meat of this issue. And it's coming up a game, the death of Mike Brown. But it was mentioned or hinted at during the Trayvon Martin thing, because we saw that Geraldo Rivera made reference to Master Martin wearing a hoodie, and maybe if he rethought it, comported himself differently, things you just can't say. Maybe he might have been alive. But the reality is maybe he might have been alive. But those who espouse respectability politics, or I should say who decry respectability politics, they're saying you should be whoever you want to be and it doesn't matter. But we're going to get into this. Now, if I can find the clip. Okay. Respectability politics, SiriusXM. Listen to this truncated version, and then I will unpack. Hold on.
Well, I mean, I actually think that it's a little bit dangerous when you start mixing the conversation between behavior and these issues of social justice. Something that they call respectability politics. So you aren't entitled to live if you've done something wrong or you've made a mistake or if you've taken a cigar. Like that entitled, so we're shifting the conversation. And so that's how the police were very effective at shifting the conversation today. They released the name of the police officer that gunned him down in the street, didn't call an ambulance for hours and hours, dumped his dead body in an SUV after it was over. They released the name of this, and then they're sort of like distracting you with this whole conversation about what this person did. It actually has nothing, like, I mean, there's nothing that he could have done that warrant an execution right there. And so, you know, and I think that's sort of a trap that we in the black community fall into a lot, where we're like, well, we need to pull our pants up. We need to do, no, pants don't have anything to do. If he feels like hanging out on Montana Avenue, that's your right as an American. Like any other person, you should have the right to do that. And so, you know, we kind of need to separate those conversations around behavior or social, or, you know, or socialization or culture with like simple criminal justice issues.
And you talk about respectability politics, and that's a big issue in our community, especially among young people. I've read story after story of people who say, why do young men have to wear suits in order to be deemed respectable?
I mean, you can get shot in a suit. Right. You know, that's what it boils down to. They don't care what you have on, you know, a suit, a tie. You can still get shot. That suit is not going to protect you from getting shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, and
all right, Captain. You know, that whole thing about wearing a suit is not going to protect you from getting shot, and they're shooting you in suits. That's not happening. And that is a cornerstone of, especially I'd say black liberalism. Liberalism, but black liberalism, a cornerstone that you could be shot at any moment by the authorities. Now, you could be shot at any moment in the hood in a suit. That's true. But she's not wording it that way because that would be problematic to her argument. But this whole notion of telegraphing your ideology, telegraphing. When Don Lemon left the plantation, went off script, and acknowledged or tipped the hat to Bill O'Reilly, who I'm not a fan of, but he tipped the hat to Bill O'Reilly because what do we say, Captain? A broken clock tells the correct time at least twice a day. It does.
Yes, sir.
And that can apply to Bill O'Reilly. He acknowledged a couple of things or just a few things that he said, you know what, he's right on this. But if you're an ideologue, you can't be right on anything. So no matter what comes out the mouth, whether it's Republican, I should say conservative, or liberal, because it goes both ways. If it's a factual statement, if it comes out the mouth of the adverse party, then you can't acknowledge that. And Don Lemon acknowledged it and said, you know something? There's some stuff that black men do need to do. Now, it's a dangerous thing, Captain. It's a dangerous thing in regards to your life and to social mobility to put out there almost to dissuade black men to pursue respectability politics in this sense. Don Lemon just said something that every other group seems not to have an issue with, but you're making it where black men are going to be a peculiarity, because he just said, if you pull up your pants, if you respect your elders, if you start to emphasize school, for some reason, these platitudes were perceived as negatives when he said it, because Bill O'Reilly said it, and Dr. Cosby has said it. But everyone else doesn't seem to have a problem with this, but when it comes to black political thought, oh, you can't say that. You know, it's very dangerous, Captain. And again, Lemon didn't say, he never said that if you kind of tweak some things, black men, if you tweak some things, these things will make your life like Shangri-La, and white folks are going to hug you and love you and welcome you into their homes and have you date their daughters and all that crap. Hold hands and eat plum cakes. That's not what he said. What he said was, if you did these things, then maybe you can move to the next level. Maybe you can get a job. Maybe you can provide for your families. Maybe you might make your life a bit better. Not that it's going to make racism go away, but it's interpreted that way. And when they say a game, this young woman said they can shoot you in a suit, and people nod their heads like that's okay. That's not really an accurate statement. Now, I've seen collateral damage. There's a woman a few years ago that was drugged out in Staten Island naked behind an automobile captain, and she killed a man of color as a pedestrian who was more than likely wearing a suit who was an attorney. That's a man wearing a suit that was killed from someone within his ethnicity that was drugged out of her mind. That is a scenario that I can see. Okay? But Raekwon, who might be involved in gang violence or some kind of criminality, is not being found in a Brooks Brothers suit being sprawled out somewhere off of Pennsylvania Avenue in Bushwick. That's not, but people say it as if it's, like, they say it and they're not, it's not deconstructed, it's not challenged. And I sat there and I said, I saw a picture of Chris Brown, Captain, who's in court again. Now, when your life depends on it, you will put on that damn suit. So this is the irony. When you do the deconstruction, Captain, you will wear the suit in death when you've been gunned down you are in a funeral home when the minister is giving you your last rites or you know, sending you home, giving you your quote unquote homecoming. You're in a suit then. You're in a suit when you are in court. I looked at Chris Brown and said, Chris Brown looks rather dapper now. He looked dapper when his life depends on it. So at some point, you will put on that suit. Why can't you perceive your life depending on it the way that Don Lemon positioned it? When it's time for you to feed your children, to move to the next level, for some reason you don't perceive your life to depend on it. But when you are before a judge, and also critics will say that you can't judge. Somebody will judge you. Most likely a judge. A judge is overseeing Chris Brown's case right now, and he's wearing a suit. So when you deconstruct, Captain, and you peel back the layers, I think we should be pursuing respectability politics. Matter of fact, and we spoke about this behind the scenes, we've got about 4 minutes. The irony is there's a belief, there's a undercurrent with respectability politics, Captain, that if you're a black person and you pursue the idioms of respectability politics, if you pursue it as a black person, you become more black. I'm sorry, pardon me. You become white. You are likening yourself to a white person if you pursue respectability politics. Let me think about this for a minute. When the Asian man gets perfect SAT scores and pursues medicine and biology and technology, is he becoming more white? I don't think so. Now, the irony is that if you pursue these things, if you pursue respectability politics the way that it's phrased or framed, in actuality becomes your thing. There's a growing trend of white Americans or white youth, a trend of them not wanting to pursue advanced courses. There was a thing in the HuffPost a few months ago, you can look this up, where a teacher overheard a conversation between two white students, and one of the students queried the other student and said to him, what are your thoughts about next year? Are you going to take AP courses? And his response was, why should I do that? I'm not Asian. Now, the Asian man, his conservatism has him pursuing respectability politics. He didn't become white. Guess what? He became Asian. Now, if black folks were to pursue respectability politics, This is the insanity of white supremacy. If you pursued it and rocked it like you rocked basketball that was once white, like you rocked baseball that was once white, like you rocked football that was once white, all of a sudden, basketball, when Sterling went off his meds, black folks said, this is a black sport. This is a black sport. No one questioned that because you dominated it. See, this is why I'm not a liberal, Al, because liberals talk this way. They say stupid crap like, you can get shot in the suit. Does that happen? Is that happening? Is Raekwon getting shot in a goddamn suit, Captain? You know, anecdotally it might happen. But when you look at the blotters, I see hoodies. You ain't supposed to say that. The blotters, they show hoodies. The surveillance cams, they show hoodies. It's the political correctness, the phoniness, and the inaccuracy that makes it why I'm not a liberal, Al. That's it. Respectability politics, a game. For black and brown people, I suggest you pursue it. Pursue respectability politics. You might just be, I don't know, black, Nigerian. The Nigerians are rocking the SAT scores. What am I, Nigerian? Do I look like Nigerian to you? That's what happens. That's what happens. Enough said. Anything else on that? We got about under a minute, Captain. I can't make it any more clear than that.
Well said. Well said. You know? Well said. You know? Well said. They think it's going to end racism. It won't end racism. We do better as a people. That's it. It's the end of the day.
I mean, you know, in the history of Asian culture, you know, how Asians were treated reprehensibly when they're laying down the tracks of the railroads, they were perceived not to be intellectual. Now they are. That was the white man's domain. Not anymore. Pursued respectability politics, Captain. They pursued it. That's it. Folks, we'll be back on Saturday for the Grindhouse at 6 o'clock. It's been real. Let's go out in another groove. This is Bernard Wright. Have a Globotrobin. That's right. That's right. Have a Globotrobin. See you on Saturday, 6 p.m.